It's my great pleasure to speak to you all this evening about a very important topic, the dynamics of spiritual academics. Certainly, just by the fact that you've come here tonight, signifies that you are special. It is one thing to be very intelligent about understanding matter and the reactions of matter. It is another thing to embark upon the extraordinary quest to understand the spiritual energy. As you may know, in Bhagavad Gita, the standard handbook of dynamic spiritual science, Krishna explains that he has two energies, matter and spirit. The intelligent human being understands that although matter is factual, it is subordinate to the spiritual energy. But where is the research institute dedicated to the spiritual energy? The spiritual scientist does not discard matter. Often, when we approach spiritual life, we may have that fear that all my material education is going to be useless. All my fund of material knowledge will be useless. No, that is far from the truth. You see, once you add Lord Krishna to all your material endeavors, then those material endeavors become extraordinarily magnified in import. Let us try to understand the shadow and the substance. Shadows are factual. We can see shadows here on the ground around us. Here, I can make a shadow for you all to see on the wall there behind my hand. There is no doubt that that shadow exists. And you can study the shadow. But is that study of the shadow as important as studying the hand that casts the shadow? That is the point. So we have this psychological fear when we approach spiritual knowledge that we'll have to turn our backs on our material fund of knowledge. But that is not true. Simply, it is a question of priority. What is more important, the shadow or the hand that casts the shadow? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, the supreme scientist, explains that the shadow energy has value only because of what makes the shadow. Someone who truly is wise, someone who truly has knowledge, will understand the total package of reality, both the shadow energy and the substance energy. Now, what is the nature of the substance? This is the field of the most dynamic spiritual research. Understanding the spiritual energy which powers the world of matter. And then going beyond even that to understand the source of all the energy. The source of both the matter and the spirit. Certainly, the energy is important. But more important than the energy is the source. Therefore, those who embark upon the foremost intellectual quest to understand Krishna and understand Krishna's energies, their life is very exciting. During my days at Yale University, as Shyamananda Prabhu was telling you of, I embarked upon a very original course of study. I was looking for the truth. Mm-hmm. Between the ages of 14 and 17, I had attended very high-powered, prestigious prep school, boarding school. It was 175 boys. Classes were maximum 5 students. And of course, the object of such a school was to send as many students as possible to the top schools, the Ivy League schools. And of those top schools, Yale and Harvard were considered the supreme destinations. So I had already done a lot of advanced studies in my secondary school days. So when I got to Yale, I told my professors, I want to find what is the real truth. Therefore, I want to cross all the academic disciplinary lines and study whatever I want from whatever field I want. So, this is a very special time in the history of Yale University. They were trying an experiment that indeed they would allow students to do that. Just cobble together your own major area of concentration. You didn't have to stick to one line. My professor advisors told me, we wish we could have done such a thing when we were students. We couldn't, or we were too afraid, but we're very happy to advise you in this pursuit. So I took so many different types of courses looking for what is real. Everything from history of science and technology to political science of revolutions to philosophy of the self. I wanted to find out what can be behind this world of material appearances. Now, I did not discard knowledge of matter. I was simply looking for what is the source of the material energy, and who can teach knowledge of the spiritual energy. So, for 4 years, I searched the university up and down, meeting the finest scholars in the world who write textbooks that are used in so many institutions. Yale University costs $25,000 a year. So for 4 years, that's $100,000. When I graduated, I discovered Bhagavad Gita as it is, the genuine presentation of spiritual science. That is when I knew my education had begun. In my last year at Yale, in my quest to find genuine knowledge of reality, I decided to take a course in Hinduism taught by a world expert in Hinduism. There's only one problem with this course. Have I told you about this? Huh? This course, Hinduism met at 8 a.m. And like every genuine student of my day, I would never take any courses that met before 11:30 because we didn't get up till 11 a.m. You know, we would take rest at 4 in the morning, rise at 11 in the morning, throw in our clothes and go to our course, our class. But this subject matter, Hinduism, I thought maybe this has the possibilities I'm looking for. So I went to the first class. I managed to get up at 7:30 and attend the first class. And the world-famous professor, he described what the course would cover. And for the first assignment, he said, I want you all to read a section of the Upanishads and then write an essay about what you think it means. So I thought to myself, you mean I got up so early in the morning just to have someone tell me that I should read a section of the Vedic texts and then speculate? I don't have to get up early in the morning to speculate. I can do that anytime. So then I decided, I know what I'll do. I'm not going to take this course. I'll take another. But I will go to the university bookshop and get the required reading list, and I will study on my own. That was a very, I would have to say, that was a very great gift that Yale University gave. They taught you how to study on your own, how to pursue research on your own. They actually pride themselves in doing that, rather than educating you to be a clone. They educate you to be able to stand on your own two feet and push ahead in terms of individualistic research. They feel this approach is more constructive for benefiting society rather than just turning out persons who cannot think independently from the conventional point of view. Maybe it has some value, their approach. Maybe their approach has some value because they, as Shyamananda Prabhu said, they produce so many presidents, so many CEOs. So, I went to the university bookshop and I got the books for the course. They looked very dry, but I thought, anyway, it's Hinduism. It could be the way to go. One was called Yoga, Immortality, and Freedom. Another one was called Bhagavad Gita, as translated by an Englishman named Edgerton. So I decided in my flat to look at this Bhagavad Gita presented by this Englishman, Edgerton. So I flipped through it. The first half were the verses of Bhagavad Gita. The second half was his commentary. So I just happened to look at the commentary. Now bear in mind that this time was the 70s in the USA when every student was a radical. If you were not a student radical, there was something wrong with you. Every student was involved in protesting against the government, down with capitalism, down with imperialism, down with this, down with that. It was the fad. And so while you were studying, you also had your pursuit of radical politics. This kept your life dynamic. So, I just opened the commentary in this Bhagavad Gita, and I saw one sentence that enraged me completely. This Englishman had written, Krishna is a concept to satisfy both the sentimentalists and the intellectuals. And somehow or other, something came over me. I immediately slammed the book shut, threw it in the corner of the room, never to open it again. And what did I say? Because I was absorbed in the radical student politics of the time, I said, just see how this British man has ruined the native people of India's book. Just see how this imperialist colonialist has imposed his interpretations on these people, our people. So, regardless of the format of my response, I can see today that Lord Krishna saved me in a powerful way from wasting my time on ingenuine Bhagavad Gitas. A few months later, when I indeed finished university, I came upon Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I was just enthralled from page one, because I was looking for genuine spiritual knowledge. I was looking for the culmination of scholarly studies. Not that I was rejecting material knowledge. Not that I was rejecting academic pursuits. But I wanted the perfection of it all. That is the point. And I was understanding real knowledge has to transform the individual. Not that you just study something and you tinker around with the material world and then you get your pay and that's it. I didn't consider that to be dynamic. I didn't consider that kind of life to be exciting. Simply you increase the knowledge of the actions and reactions of the material energy. But you yourself are never transformed. You yourself don't know who you are. You don't understand your components. You don't understand whether you are matter or spirit or a combination of both. You have no understanding of the connection between yourself and the supreme source of everything. You never even think about these things. You simply get some prestige for making some little adjustments, some little tinkering with material energy. Maybe you'll discover some big theory which will last for some years and then disappear. But that's all. You yourself will not be transformed by what you're studying. So, although I understood the practical necessity of material knowledge, I wanted something beyond that at the same time. I wanted the knowledge that will transform me and transform my status in this material world. Therefore, I was immediately impressed by Bhagavad Gita as it is. In the 30 years that have passed since that time, I can see that it is a rare opportunity to have a background in material understanding as well as to acquire a solid fund of knowledge in spiritual understanding. So I'm appreciative of Yale University for teaching me how to be an independent researcher, how to stand on my own two feet and not automatically toe the party line. You see, the multinational corporations that donate huge funds to Yale University, they understand, they're smart, they understand. Mostly, we want persons who are going to be company clones, mostly, corporate clones, mostly. Those persons we get from the ordinary institutions. They'll staff our middle management levels. But for the profit of our corporations, we need at the top persons who are going to generate new pathways, new streams of revenue, new thinking. So they rely on the top institutions like Yale and Harvard for that. For the run-of-the-mill kind of managers, they'll go to ordinary institution. But they're smart enough to understand if we're going to remain competitive, we need some pioneers. And the kind of thinking or the course of study that produces pioneers is different from what produces the ordinary, you know, white-collar worker. Someone who is just perpetuating the status quo. Those persons are necessary, but the great changes will be done by those who are trained to innovate. So I wanted the most exciting life as an innovator. Not that I didn't see the value in those who are studying in an ordinary way. That's required. But I could see 30 years ago that the most important work is done by the pioneers. Those who have one foot in both worlds. They have a solid understanding of the material world, and they're not afraid to step into the spiritual world, the spiritual science, the spiritual reality. And then, although I didn't know it at that time 30 years ago, I found out that the spiritual dimension is more important than the material dimension. It's not a question of one instead of the other. Both are there. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that both energies belong to him. It's just one is superior and one is inferior. Just like the shadow exists, but the shadow is inferior in importance to the hand that casts the shadow. Now, what about personal transformation? So much of our knowledge depends on our subjective state of consciousness. In other words, according to your level of consciousness, that will determine what you can understand. Western knowledge, and for the most part, here in India, you are studying Western knowledge, fails to understand how your own particular level of consciousness determines what you can know. The standard or conventional understanding is that your personal life is one thing and your research is another thing. That means never mind what your character is, never mind what the quality of your consciousness is, has no bearing on your research. It has no bearing on your fund of knowledge. But the Vedic standpoint says something different. According to the quality of your consciousness, that determines the level of your perception, how much of reality you can actually fathom, how much of reality you can actually grasp. So it's very important to refine your consciousness, to distill your consciousness, because that will allow you access to deeper perceptions. Therefore, self-transformation is very important for grasping real knowledge. Any system of knowledge that has no program for self-transformation will not take you far. And that is the problem with so-called civilization today. People are not getting very far. They are brilliant in a very narrow sphere of understanding. Very narrow. within that very narrow spectrum of understanding, they're very powerful. But that power is at the expense of understanding the full availability of knowledge that they should be having. This is the problem with extreme specialization. Of course, the marketplace rewards extreme specialization. But in terms of producing healthy individuals, this extreme specialization has become a great disaster. The disaster is so great that even the materialistic institutions, corporations in the USA are understanding it actually is not to our benefit to produce persons of such a narrow specialization, because they actually can't function properly in terms of interrelatedness. It's more advantageous for the multinational corporation. It's more advantageous for the research institution to have persons who can actually know how to act like human beings. Otherwise, if their understanding, if we have persons who just simply focus on a very narrow area of research, it's very unwieldy. It's very clumsy to deal with these persons in the workplace or a laboratory environment. Now, of course, such persons should pursue their line of reasoning to the ultimate conclusion, that real knowledge transforms the individual. So much so that you see reality in a completely different way based on your acquisition, your acquiring of spiritual knowledge. One fear that we may have is that spiritual knowledge, spiritual academics, is just religious belief. Everyone has to believe in something, and so you take on a religious belief in order to feel better about your life and to stop you from feeling insecure. It's kind of like, what do you call it? The thing babies put in their mouth? Pacifier. In New Zealand, Australia, where I'm based, they're called dummies. Pacifier. I need a belief system to pacify me, so I put this thing in my mouth. I believe in this, I believe in that. What do you believe in? And those who don't have a belief system, they are looked upon often as being strong. They stand on their own 2 feet. They don't need any pacifier in their mouth. But that's not true. They believe in matter. And they assign to matter extraordinary powers. Matter can do the impossible. Yes? From matter arises consciousness. From matter arises life. From matter arises intelligence, order, all from matter, given enough time and chance. This is a belief. Just like I know in some institutions in Europe, when Marxism was more in vogue, more fashionable, the universities would teach Marxism in the religious department. Now, it's funny because Marx said that religion is the opiate of the people. It's the narcotic that would drug people. But here, these universities realize Marx is teaching a religious belief. We'll put it in the religious department. Similarly, matterism is a religious belief. This exclusive embracing of matter as the ultimate. There's nothing more, just matter. And the more we master the interactions of matter, the more there'll be progress. The more there'll be happiness. This is a religious belief. So it's not that those who take to the dynamic path of spiritual understanding are just embracing a belief system and nothing more. No. Krishna conscious knowledge leads to personal transformation, and then your vision of reality changes. You don't simply see shadows everywhere. You can see the substance. That is the exciting thing. The more your consciousness becomes purified because of your purified lifestyle, your purified living habits, the more you're able to perceive the reality of the spiritual energy. It's not just theoretical. What does Lord Sri Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Jnana vijnana triptatma kutashto vijitendriya. The enlightened person, the transformed person, is satisfied by both theoretical and applied knowledge. Therefore, such a person can control his senses. How many people do you know who can truly control their senses? Not many at all. If you say to your friends, let's think about it. What do you think about controlling the mind and controlling the senses? Your friends will laugh at you. What is the point of that? How does controlling your mind and senses have anything to do with reality? Just do your studies. Just compete. Just be afraid of your fellow students because they may get a better situation than you. Don't share any of your tips with them. It's each man for himself. No one sees the practical value in learning the basics, how to control your own mind and senses. Therefore, how can there be any mental clarity and intellectual precision when your mind and senses are just not yours and not under your control? You're like trapped in a vehicle and it's driving down the highway and you can't control it. That is the nature of society today. I remember reading about Stephen Hawking, the great mathematician. He holds the Lucent Chair at Cambridge University. He's very famous for writing the top-selling scientific popular book of all time, Brief History of Time. And this book is famous as a book everyone has on their bookshelf and on their coffee table, but no one can understand. No one's read it. Yes, some of you? Yes, you purchased? Yes? Yes, yes, yes. All over the world, it sold millions of copies. It's a prestigious thing to have. Yes, I bought Brief History of Time, Stephen Hawking's. See, there it is on my bookshelf. But it's famous as the book that no one has read. It is turned to page one, page two. Well, it must be science. I can't understand it. So, as you know, Hawking's, he is paralyzed completely. So much so he can't even speak. He needs some kind of synthesizer to speak. And nevertheless, he was a married man. he had children, one or two, before his complete paralysis set in. And his wife took care of him. You can imagine what it's like to take care of such a brilliant person who cannot move a muscle, even to talk. And to help take care of him, there was a nurse. So he ended up having an affair with the nurse and leaving his wife, who took care of him for 20 years in this completely paralyzed condition. And what was the reason he gave for having some kind of affair with the nurse and abandoning his wife? He said, "I just wanted to prove I could do it." This is the topmost brain, the foremost scientist. "I wanted to show that, like everyone else, I could have a lusty affair. I could have an extramarital affair. I wanted to show that I could do it." How does that strike you? How could he do that? Leaving his wife, who took care of him hand and foot for 20 years in his completely paralyzed condition, so paralyzed he can't even speak, yet he abandoned her for his nurse just to show, "I also can experience degradations." Such persons don't understand that this low consciousness will influence how much of reality they can perceive. This is my point. The lifestyle of the spiritual person allows a different access to reality. It's not just a question of switching belief systems. It's a question of accessing different aspects of reality, more complete aspects of reality. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, actually makes a difference. It's not just that you feel good because you have a nice-sounding religious belief sitting on your head. No, you see differently, you taste differently, you smell differently, you feel differently, you know differently. And the sense of dynamics that you feel is completely different when you are situated in spiritual knowledge. The dynamics of material life is very stultifying. That means very rigid, and you become fossilized. There's not much room for opportunity in the material dynamic. How much can you do with your basic senses? How much satisfaction can your basic senses bring you? You can advance technology in so many ways, but when it comes time for your personal life, how much really is there for your senses to indulge in? Not that many alternatives. You can surround yourself with a multitude of technological complications, but then when it comes to your own sensory experience, what you taste, touch, feel, smell, and see, there really are not that many major differences available to you. But in your mind, you imagine, oh, there's unlimited opportunity, unlimited scope. This is all an hallucination. the material energy, the shadow energy, does not offer that many alternatives in reality. But in your mind, you imagine there's so many alternatives. The spiritual energy, however, offers unlimited room for variety, variegated experience. Matter by nature is limited. The spiritual energy is unlimited. The greatest need is to train spiritual scientists. That doesn't mean turning your back on material knowledge and the material energy. It just means recognizing that the spiritual reality is more important. As you research the spiritual energy and research the source of the material and spiritual energy, you become transformed. Your mind and senses become spiritualized, and that is very necessary, because without the spiritualization of your research apparatus, your senses, you cannot effectively operate in the spiritual reality. There's no separation between your consciousness and what you are researching. This truth is very apparent when you study spiritual science. It's even becoming apparent when you study material science. As Heisenberg said, when you study nature, you're not actually studying nature, you're studying your own method of approaching nature. That's actually what's going on. Vedic knowledge recognizes that according to your level of consciousness, that determines what you can know. Therefore, if you want to change the level of what you know, then change the level of your consciousness. You'll see the world completely, in a completely different way. It's not just a question of having a nice, tidy religious belief. I'm feeling a bit insecure in the world. I was feeling a bit bewildered, so I took on a religious belief. It's not like that. That is our fear. That will be just locked into some dogma, some religious formula, and we'll have kind of a silly smile on our face. God. When I was a student at Yale, they had some Christian activists, and they would always, as we walked from class to class, they would try to hand out tracts. You know, you call them tracts? Yes, little pamphlets. And we referred to them in a, how do you say, a disparaging or a demeaning way. We called them the God Squad. There was a popular television show then about some kind of, how do you say, sophisticated, cool New York City police investigators, and they were called the Mod Squad. So we called these Christian propagators, we called them the God Squad. We're walking along, and they approach you with a flyer. Oh, no, here they are, the God Squad. Quick, let's go another direction. So our fear may be that this is what Krishna consciousness is about. No. It's not about taking on some belief system so you'll feel good about yourself. I have a belief. I feel better now. No. It's about personal transformation so that you'll access different levels of experience, different levels of reality. The challenge is that in many societies, this field of research, the spiritual reality, does not receive the blessings of the mainstream. Although so many of the greatest scientists have said that the real research work is to understand what is behind the actions and reactions of matter. But where do you get such training and knowledge and experience? I'm happy to tell you that Krishna consciousness, that ancient system known in Sanskrit as Sanatan Dharma, that offers you the complete opportunity for personal transformation and thus complete understanding of the total reality, which consists of matter and spirit. I've explained so many times that the very fact that you have consciousness lets you know there's something non-material about you and reality. The very fact that there is no material explanation for consciousness lets you know there's something special going on. Did you know that there is not one scientific instrument in the whole world that will directly detect consciousness? Not one. Krishna speaks about these things in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you should know the consciousness that pervades your body indicates that there is the spiritual energy, the spirit soul. The most important area of research for your personal success is Krishna consciousness. To be Krishna conscious doesn't mean to reject your material knowledge. No, I didn't reject my material knowledge that I acquired at Yale. I just took it to another level. Another level that would be more productive for me and for the benefit of the world. So I invite you to embark upon this quest as the crowning jewel of your academic pursuits. Remember, knowledge that offers no system of personal transformation is not important knowledge at all. So this is the challenge. All right. Are there any questions?
Can't we understand what we call as spiritual energy in terms of by increasing our knowledge of matter? So, for example, in MIT, there is a center called as Brain and Cognitive Studies. So their aim is to understand the nature of the spirit by understanding matter more deeply. I mean, they say that we can understand the mind by a hierarchy of knowledge. You start with molecules, then you go to neurons, assembly of clusters of neurons, and then you go on one level higher each time.
One level higher each time to where?
To the final understanding of what consciousness is in terms of matter.
And who has proved that? This is religion, you're telling me. Yes, it's a belief.
It's a belief.
Yes, it's a religious belief.
It's not yet.
Not yet. Just now coming.
Huh? It might be an alternative. Maybe in future they might find out something.
Saying in MIT, there is a center that is already doing it, and in the future they actually might understand consciousness by intensely studying matter.
This is belief. Okay, you can take it in that way, but we're saying that by taking up the Krishna conscious methods, you'll understand consciousness.
One way to understand it, and this might be an alternative way to understand
it. Now, which method looks more appealing to you?
Right now I'm involved in the study of matter, so maybe the method
will be. Will that satisfy you?
I'm not sure.
Do you really think there's nothing but matter? That's all?
I'm not sure.
All right. So therefore, don't be afraid to look in another direction. That's all. Okay? Don't be afraid. Now, what program do materialistic researchers have for personal transformation? None. If you
train your mind also while doing research.
Train your mind. Why?
Well, you need to train
yourself. Why? You're just matter.
Anybody does good research, just train your mind.
No, you're just matter. Why should you worry about training your mind? This is matter. This is matter. Why worry about anything? Nothing matters because you're just matter. Huh?
We can generalize that matter. Matter arranges differently, does different things.
Okay. So you are matter arranged differently as a so-called person. This is matter arranged as a microphone. If I throw the microphone over the side here, it's not the greatest disaster in the world. If I throw you over the side, I'm just throwing over the side different arrangements of matter, right?
It has a different meaning in a society.
Huh?
It has a different meaning.
Oh, religious belief. You believe that you, as an arrangement of matter, have a different meaning than the microphone. All what?
If you consider poems, poetry.
Exactly. Now you understand.
But we give meaning of it.
Who? What gives meaning?
Our clear understanding of meaning.
Poetry just arrangement of words, but we give it importance of giving meaning.
But who is the we that gives it meaning? Matter gives meaning now also, huh? You're amazing. Just like clocks give time, right? Have you opened up a clock and found time? Similarly, have you opened up the brain and found consciousness? What scientist has done that? Right, and still people are opening up clocks to find time. I got this example from a brilliant scientist at Princeton University. He talks like that whenever someone says they're going to find consciousness in the brain. He says, okay, let's find time in clocks. His name is Per Hutt. He's at the Princeton University Institute for Paranormal Scientific Exploration. And how will life improve by your pursuing that course? Really? You don't study social sciences, do you?
I don't.
Right, that's why you can say like that. Where was I speaking last night?
UICT.
Yes. That's the finest institute for chemical researchers, yes? I thought that you all were the best, but I was informed that they are the foremost in that field of chemistry, yes? So I was explaining to them the social realities in the so-called affluent countries, how the more choices there are for your lifestyle, so many products available, so many options in terms of what you can buy, the more unhappy you become. This is documented now by researchers at Yale University. The more you have to choose from, the more miserable you become. And ultimately, you become bewildered. I was telling them statistics about children born in affluent families in the USA. 50% of them say that their life is worse than their parents' life. Why? Because they say there's so much to choose from. There's so much pressure on us. So many options. We can't handle it. You're wrong. Let me give you statistics. Now you listen. Let's talk science. Let's not talk belief. Do you know that there is a World Value Survey sponsored by the United Nations in which they use material parameters for determining which countries are the most happy? So in the survey done 2 or 3 years ago, guess what country came out as the happiest? The poorest country in the world, Bangladesh, came out in this scientific study, came out as the happiest. This is very astounding. The affluent countries, USA, Germany, England, this, that, they were only like number 15, 16, 17, 18. The poor countries were number 1 and 2. Very shocking. Now I'm giving you solid research. It should make you think that there's something strange going on. Think about it. I don't expect you to overnight change your lifestyle, but I would, as you're an intelligent person, I think you should think about these things. Yes, you all do that all the time, don't you? It's never been done before, right?
He has his own set of ethics.
Yes, everyone has their own set of ethics. Anyway, I'm simply advising that you do consider these other alternatives. I appreciate your points.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Maharaj, you were explaining how material scientists don't have any means to detect consciousness.
Directly.
But they have there are so many instruments in the medical science to detect whether the person is living or dead.
But that is symptoms. There's no technological device that directly detects consciousness. You can only infer from symptoms. Well, I'm conscious, so whatever that is. So you must be conscious also, because you're talking to me. Or look at the symptoms of look at the readings that our instruments are giving. They're showing that there's physical and physical activity, there's brain activity. So you must be conscious. But there's nothing direct. Now, you can hope that, well, one day it will be shown that consciousness comes from matter. One day it will be shown that time comes from clocks. You can hope like that. But I'm simply asking, why not explore other possibilities, as many scientists are doing? Do you know what the statistics are for scientists researching consciousness? 30% say consciousness comes from matter. We can't prove it, but we have no doubt. 30% say we're sure consciousness doesn't come from matter. We can't prove it, but it's quite obvious. And then 40% say we just don't know. So you have at least 70% who are not on the materialistic side. Either they say it can't be possible that consciousness has a material origin, or else they say we don't know. Only 30% are hardcore materialists. That's the actual situation in that field of research. So, okay, just like our friend here, this gentleman was quoting, MIT is doing this and that. But let's look at the whole field and see what's going on. If you can understand this point, it'll be of great impetus for your personal transformation. Let me upgrade my consciousness, and then my understanding, my experience of the world will change. This is a great possibility. Anything else?
You said that radicalism was a fad at your time in Yale University.
Yes.
I heard about a strange society called Skulls and Bones Society in Yale. Does it exist in Yale at your time?
Of course. Of course. The topmost universities, they have what are called secret societies. You cannot ask to join. They select you.
On what basis?
That you have the potential to become a future world controller.
It was there at Yale at your time?
It's always been there. Just like there are presidents and prime ministers and CEOs, so similarly there's a Skull and Bone Society. It's one of many societies at Yale. You don't have these things at Indian universities, like fraternities. They're not there. Not so organized. It's so. So it exists. It's a very convenient way of making a cartel. You gather into a private group persons, and then you have a lifetime relationship and you do favors for each other. Yeah. You're interested in that kind of thing? Materialistic people have their enclaves, their groups, and these spiritual people have their enclaves, their groups. It's the way it's always been. Anything else? Yes.
Raj, you said that to understand reality better, we need to upgrade our consciousness. But how to know that the consciousness, by the process, whatever we are doing to upgrade the consciousness, is it really doing that? Because we don't know the reality. So what is coming, what our understanding is being improved, or whether and which way we are going, how to understand it.
Just like for your studies here at IIT, you have a guide. Similarly, in your spiritual pursuits, you need a guide. Otherwise, you could concoct and go off the track. So you need tutelage. You need instruction as you enter the Krishna Conscious Laboratory. That facility is offered. So you won't be left to hallucinate. Guidance is very important. Just like during my studies at Yale, I had academic guides, even though I was on independent program. Similarly, in Krishna consciousness, we have our guides. Experienced researchers. Experienced in the art of personal transformation. Anything else?
Maharaj?
Yes?
What do you mean by art of personal transformation?
What do I mean by?
Art of personal transformation.
Personal transformation is a science, art, and culture. It involves every aspect of the human experience. How to act in such a way that your consciousness becomes purified. This requires knowledge. This requires a different way of doing things. This requires a different way of being. And the results are that you have a different experience of the world. A different slice of reality opens up to you in response to your different consciousness. This is exciting. So we're not talking about religious belief. We're talking about major alterations, major internal alterations. Very exciting. And those internal alterations become so significant that your vision changes. You don't see things in the same way as you did before when you were trapped in matterism. How will you know if this is true or not? Enter into the laboratory and test. No blind faith. I'm not speaking about blind faith. I'm just trying to inspire you to enter into this spiritual laboratory. Take up this dynamic experience and see what happens. That's all. Record the results. Isn't that fair enough? No blind faith. Observe your own personal transformation. Observe how your vision of reality changes. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. Forgive me if I was a little abrupt in letting you know that materialistic scientists have many shortcomings. That's my specialty, by the way. It's like you have your specialty, I have mine. I've studied this for 35 years. So therefore, I was a little firm with you. I hope you don't mind. It's like you have your fields of study. Yeah. Engineering, various disciplines. If I say something about those fields, you'll be polite but quite firm that so similarly, I expect the same. Okay. Yes.
While living in the materialistic society, in this hard world of struggle, means you have to struggle even as a practitioner of Krishna consciousness. And it is seen that the surrounding affects a lot. Means those staying in association, someone going for a job and coming back, taking materialistic association for 8 to 10 hours in a day. So how can a person maintain his strong vows of Krishna consciousness even under such
such a kind of circumstances? How can one remain strong in such situations?
Good association makes everything easy. If we associate with those who are dedicated spiritual scientists, we feel camaraderie. We feel the bonding with like-minded persons, which makes any task easier. Just like when you're studying for some exam, if you can help each other in achieving this, in dealing with this common obstacle, it becomes easier. Although I don't know if that goes on. Does that happen? Or you're afraid that if you help someone else, they'll get a better situation than you. They'll reduce your possibilities for the future. Yes? A lot of fear, yes. Yes. In my days at Yale, when there was an exam, all your friends would gather together and they would study different aspects of the subject matter and then prepare each other for the test. And it was like bonding by doing that. Okay, you take chapter one, I'll take chapter two, you take chapter three, rather than one person reading all the chapters. And then we, the night before the exam, we put our heads together. And this produced, deep relationships from the material point of view. Just an example. So good association, good camaraderie makes everything easy. Therefore, those who are embarking on the quest to perceive the spiritual reality need good association. Good camaraderie. Then there's no struggle. Yes.
Maharaj, you told about major internal alterations. So, what happens actually, and how much time it may take?
What field are you studying?
I'm a computer engineer.
Computer engineer. How much time would it take me to become expert in computer engineering?
It took 21 years. In a sense, considering all the schooling and college years.
Mm-hmm. So, how soon should I expect to be able to make some progress?
Maybe much more than that.
Wouldn't it depend a lot on how serious I am?
Yes.
If I just dabble a few minutes every day, how quickly will I achieve the goal?
That will become very objective.
But if I'm very serious and I really absorb myself, then it's possible I can achieve the goal much quicker. So similarly, in spiritual knowledge, much depends on your desire. How much do you really want this goal? How much are you willing to apply yourself? Each person has to ask that question. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Maharaj, when will I be able to say that I have a full consciousness or a Krishna consciousness, in other words?
First, you'll understand that yourself is different from the body and mind. That is preliminary spiritualization. Then you will experience a decrease in the temporary desires for illusion. It's like when you have a fever, you'll feel the fever come down. And then you'll move to the phase of not simply understanding your identity beyond the body and mind, but also understanding that you are part of a greater reality, and you'll begin to experience the nature of that greater reality. Just like the sunlight is coming from the sun. If you simply think that there's sunlight without understanding the sun, you're not understanding fully. Similarly, if you simply understand consciousness and not understand Krishna, you're not understanding fully. You have to get to the source of the consciousness. You have to understand the greater reality that includes you. That greater reality is spiritual consciousness. Just like you as a tiny individual, your spiritual consciousness. So what is the nature of the ultimate spiritual conscious reality? Understanding these things is Krishna consciousness.
Okay, suppose I have attained the full consciousness, and let's look into a situation. One day I sit on an exam,
mm-hmm.
and I forgot something of about a question. It was something which I read overnight. Something which I had read the night before. But in the exam, I could not recollect. I forgot it and I could not recollect. Does having full consciousness mean that I sit on there for a moment and then try to look beyond what the world that is just putting me forgotten? Will I be able to see something that I read the night before if I have the full consciousness?
Our students who are at IIT and who practice Krishna consciousness, they do very well in their studies.
He's asking this, if I am fully Krishna conscious, then just one glance at my book and then I understand the whole thing. So will it work like that, like a miracle?
You might have more important things to do. Could it be possible? Just because you are doing your studies now very diligently doesn't mean that there's nothing more important. You understand what I'm saying? Becoming Krishna conscious doesn't mean you forsake your studies. But it may mean that, could it be that there are more important things to do? Could that possibility be there?
No, but
understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do understand that.
Could it be possible? That's all I'm asking. To acknowledge that there could be something more important doesn't mean you neglect the less important thing, right? Just entertain that possibility.
Yes, I do have such a belief. Yeah. God might be having something for me, something different from that exam. But such a situation I often encounter in exam, like forgetting something which I read the night before.
Forgetfulness is a part of life in this world. Do you remember your past life? Do you remember taking birth? So forgetfulness is a part of living material life. What happens when you'll go to sleep tonight? You'll forget. And then when you wake up in the morning, you remember. But you'll forget so many dreams you had while you were sleeping. So forgetfulness is just a regular part of life. Now you have to understand what is the greatest thing that you're forgetting. That greatest thing you're forgetting is your own identity. And you're forgetting Krishna, the source of all identity. So you should become accustomed to forgetting because it's going on all the time.
I have a dog on myself. Why am I not able to apply the power of consciousness to see something that is that is lying behind me?
Lying behind what?
Behind the world that is trying to.
Why aren't you able to see the reality that lies behind the curtain? First of all, you are a limited living entity. You're not unlimited. Krishna is unlimited. You, as part of Krishna, are limited. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Krishna starts talking about things that he and Arjuna did in many previous appearances, millions of years before. And Arjuna asks Krishna, how do you know all this? Krishna explained to him, many, many appearances in this world you and I have had. I can remember all of them. You have forgotten. So, certainly, if you become Krishna conscious, your life will become transformed, but you won't become omniscient. You cannot be all-knowing because you're limited. Okay?
Maharaj,
In
your college days, what were those life experiences that made you so eager to go for the hunt of spirituality?
I wanted the best pleasure. And I realized that material pleasure always has a beginning and end. I prided myself on being a pleasure lover, a connoisseur, a researcher of pleasure. So, if indeed I was truly an expert in pleasure, that meant I had to find pleasure that didn't have an end. I took it very seriously as an academic pursuit. The investigation of pleasure. What do you think?
You wanted to be topper, or in eyes of your parents, you want to prove something?
Oh, I'd already done that. That was no big thing. When I was 14 years old, I was getting scholarships. You call them that here? Getting scholarships and this and that. So I was ready to move on to higher levels. I wanted to research pleasure, to investigate the highest possibilities for pleasure. They don't teach that here? Yes.
What I understood that your basic reason for taking AC Krishna consciousness is to take it as experiment as another option. So until unless we have not become our consciousness has not become pure, and we do not have the firm belief on this process, is it not were to look for other options which are, you know, which come across. So what I mean is, until unless we do not have full belief on this process, can we look for some other processes as an experiment?
Sure, you can do whatever you like. But how much time do you have in your short life if you are being presented with the best thing? That thing that can address all situations. The one key that opens all the doors. Why not investigate that? Not by faith, but investigate.
But then there are many who are aiming like this.
Really?
Like, they'll be saying, in the very beginning, as a neophyte, if you see, they'll be claiming this.
So you have to educate yourself. What is your field of research?
I'm an electronics engineer.
Electronics engineer, yes? Oh, you mean like how to put batteries in a torch? I could say that's what I've been told electrical engineers do. They know how to open a torch and put batteries inside. I've been told that. How do I know what is right and what is wrong about electrical engineering? On what basis can I make a decision who's a genuine electrical engineer? This microphone may have a problem, and then he'll come along and do something, jiggle the cord and the sound, and then the sound comes again. Oh, you are an electrical engineer. How will I know not to do like that? Hmm? How? What will you say?
No, but this should happen every time.
But just because he can like this and make the...
But I don't think so. That every time he'll do like that, it would work.
Still, if even just a few times, I would accept him as electrical engineer. You wouldn't. Well, what's the difference between me and you then? You have knowledge. You took the trouble to educate yourself. Otherwise, you'd be bewildered like me. Oh, you're an electrical engineer. In other words, when you don't have knowledge, you'll easily be cheated. So it's your responsibility to get knowledge of what is genuine spiritual practice. Just like if I'm truly interested in who is a genuine electrical engineer, I'll equip myself with knowledge. Otherwise, without knowledge, you're going to be cheated. That's just the way it is. You have to be abreast with the subject matter. You have to be fully equipped in order to make a proper decision. That's life. Okay? There's no way you can get around that point. You have a responsibility as a fully conscious human being to gather the most comprehensive spiritual knowledge possible. That is your individual responsibility as a human being. Then your life will be fully developed. Myself, not knowing anything about electrical engineering, if you took me into your laboratory, you could tell me so many things, and you know, and I would just accept, oh, yeah. You could tell me electricity falls from the sky into the batteries. Yeah. Right? I wouldn't know. So what is the only solution for me? I have to educate myself from a genuine teacher. It is the same thing about spiritual knowledge. You don't know. So anyone can come along, come up to you. I am God. Believe. And what can you say? You have to take the trouble to educate yourself. Therefore, I keep emphasizing, we're not talking about blind faith. We're not talking about religious belief. We're talking about personal transformation on the basis of comprehensive spiritual knowledge and genuine spiritual practice. That's all right? Now, if you want to prove what I'm saying to yourself, you take up the process. You enter the laboratory and see the results. That's all. That's all. Who knows? You might find out that it could be true. Wouldn't that be something? That possibility is there, right? That everything is not just matter. Just think, if that possibility is true, what kind of life awaits you? So many new horizons open up, yes? Still, as I said in the beginning of my presentation to you, we're not advocating you neglect the material knowledge. Even those who are practicing Krishna consciousness in a deep way, we also have knowledge of the material world. Just like I fly around the world twice a year. In order to do that, I need to know more than any travel agent. When I go to a travel agent, I do not ask. I tell the travel agent what to do. You do like this, you do like that, you give me this kind of ticket, like this, that. I know more than the travel agent. So does that sound like someone who has turned their back on the material world and doesn't understand anything? You go to a travel agent, you'll just be cheated. I guarantee it. You can't know all the things that they know while you're absorbed in your engineering studies. But I know because I travel all the time. It's like I'm going to South Africa in 2 days. So I got my ticket in Delhi. So the travel agent said, this, you know, for going to South Africa and back and traveling within South Africa, 68,000 rupees. I said, forget it. I know that it can be gotten cheaper. The travel agent said, what do you mean? Everyone in Delhi knows this is the price. I said, let's go on the internet right now and I'll show you where it's cheaper. Oh, that's not necessary. I think that we actually have a better ticket available. So, this is material knowledge, isn't it? It's hard work understanding all these things. So, I haven't turned my back on the material world. I'm using material knowledge for the highest purpose, because why am I traveling? I'm not traveling to make money. I'm not traveling for my own selfish purposes. I'm traveling to help people in their personal transformations, to bring their life to the highest possible level. But in the pursuit of that goal, I use material knowledge. Just like I was giving you social statistics to dispel the illusion that so many engineers have that when the affluence of society increases, when the benefits of technology become more prolific, become more widespread, then the happiness increases. It's a complete illusion. How do I know these things? Because I study it. What do you think? I just pull these things off the top of my head? I study. I use my Yale training to study things that will benefit people, to shatter their illusions. Surprising, huh? So please try to understand this Krishna consciousness in a different way. You're studying now? Certainly what you're studying can be used for higher purposes. You're studying matter, but that material study can be used for spiritual purposes. That'll be the perfection of your life. All right.
Hare Krishna. So we are very much thankful to His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj. Usually when students approach the teacher, they go in the classroom and attend the lecture. But here His Holiness has come all the way to give this spiritual knowledge to all of us. So we are very much grateful to Him. There is no faculty where you can go and learn this. So it's a special advantage and blessing for us that we get this knowledge. So we would like to thank Him and express our gratitude by loudly chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol!